One thing is, you have to increase the volume.
Volume. Om. 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 Some more. Om. You can have some more. Ah, now it is. Now I am very comfortable. So that I need not struggle to put some energy into it.
Yeah.
This is good. I came here 2 minutes early because I can adjust all these things like that.
Good for us also, Swami.
Okay. Yeah, very nice. Today you have the English version with you.
We also sent
very nice.
Sent email and some copies are
available. Ah, very nice. Yeah. Society into groups and pick up a group. That is not the idea. So those who fulfill these qualifications. Now, how to fulfill these qualifications? If they are physical qualifications, you have to go home and make changes and come back. Whereas they are not physical in nature. They are qualifications in the form of the qualities of heart and mind. That kind of qualification. That's why they become part and parcel of the teaching. Even as you understand about the qualifications, you become qualified. Like Shantanam. So you must be quiet. You see, in life, there is a phase for activism that begins in the childhood, continues into the youth, and then middle age. And even later part of the middle age, you can even say the initial parts of the old age, up to that, activism continues. You see, in every government there is a retirement age. What does it mean? Did you ever pay attention to that? Retirement age means what? Yes sir, you have worked enough, now you relax. That is the idea. It doesn't mean you vegetate. It is not about vegetating, it is about relaxing. So, why to relax? Because unless you relax, you will not be able to see the higher reality. You should be able to see the higher reality. You see, what I mean higher? Generally, what we think we know is nothing but a name and form. That is all you know. Suppose when you look at an object and then assume that you know, about that object, just because you know its name, is mere ignorance. Like, you look at a mango tree. Now, you think about it, what do you know about that object which you call mango tree? So, you know, you do not know anything about it. You don't know? You don't know anything about it. But what all you know is its name, mango tree. And this name is not knowledge. It is conditioning. You are conditioned to call it mango tree. Right? That is the conditioning. And therefore, the conditioning coming from the society and the family, it parades as knowledge. Now, what do you know about that tree, that object you call tree? What do you know about it? There is life in it. Do you know anything about life? You don't know. So, how the life is manifesting in that tree? You can see the outer manifestation of that life. But what is it really? What is its connection with the reality? You see, the tree, what you call tree, is connected to the infinite. It is connected to Prithivi. And through the Prithivi, it is connected to the Brahmanda. And through the Brahmanda, it is connected to the absolute reality, which we call Brahman. You do not know any of that. Just you know the name. The name is not knowledge. You don't call the name as knowledge. Name is conditioning. Like necklace. Necklace is the name. It is not necklace, it is gold. And what we know about gold is very little. I would say, you do not even know what is gold really. What gold really is, you do not even know. Suppose you are a very good chemist, then you know something more about that gold. But then, it is not gold, it is a collection of atoms. But then, what you know about atoms is very little. Even in physics, in modern physics, they are still struggling to find out what is an atom, what is its mass, why it has mass, what is the electric charge, the basic structure of the atom. Most of it is still secret only. Still they are searching for it. Therefore, what you think you know is only a name. Anyway, I started with something and went a bit deeper into it. We pulled back. Therefore, as long as your mind is active, it is moving constantly, so long you will not have that space, that felicity to know, to see the reality. People do not know how to see. They only know how to stare. So, because the mind is active, mind is projecting all the time. So, you are projecting all the time. And therefore, in fact, what do you call thinking? You call it thinking. I am thinking. I will say, dear sir, you are not thinking, you are imagining. The boundary between thinking and imagining, there is no boundary. What you call thinking, I call it imagining. So, like, here is my child, I gave birth to this child, I will make him an engineer or a doctor. So, that is what the father is thinking. The child is 4-year-old, the father is thinking. Now, is he thinking or is he imagining? I have invested this much money in the stock and it will go up. People believe that the stock will always go up. They just fail to understand that whatever goes up has to come down, including the stock. And when you look at in the New York Times, I see that graph. Every day he will put a graph. And that graph goes up, comes down, goes up, comes down, goes up, comes down. They also see that. But still they fail to understand that it doesn't go up permanently, it comes down. So you feel it will go up. You are imagining. You are just imagining. Therefore, What you call thinking is nothing but projection, projecting, imagining. Therefore, put an end to it. It doesn't help you to know the reality. What all it gets you is a bunch of names and forms. Names associated with forms. That is all you get. You don't get the reality. So to get the reality, to see the reality, instead of staring at the names and forms, to be able to see the reality, your mind must be quiet. Therefore in life, there is time for activism, what we call pravritti. Dharma is of two kinds. Pravritti dharma, nivritti dharma. So, suppose here is a young man, ready to get married, I won't teach him nivritti dharma. I will teach him pravritti dharma. Dear son, make money, but follow the law. Pay the taxes. Dharma. Make money by all means. Go for honeymoon and picnic, etc. But be moderate about those things. Otherwise you will become sick or you will be in trouble or both. Therefore, be moderate. This is what is called dharma. Pravritti dharma. Therefore, for a young man who is about to get married or about to go to honeymoon, we don't teach nivritti dharma. We teach him pravritti dharma. Here is a person who is done with the world. We are coming to that also, Vedara, Vedam. For whatever reason, some people are done with the world even in an early age. Whereas some people are not done with the world even in very ripe age. The person is almost ready to go to burial ground or cremation ground, yet he is planning something about the world. You see, the people, the so-called traditional people, they are on the deathbed and constantly worrying about my son, my daughter, my grandson, my granddaughter. That is how they worry about. Supposed to be very orthodox or traditional or whatever. This is the kind of worry they have. What will happen to my properties? What will happen to my wealth? I have seen all the... I met an old man. Everybody becomes old. I am not saying in a ridiculing way. An elderly person, who did not live much long after I saw him. I went to see him. Because somebody said he mentioned your name and he may not survive for long. Why not have a look at him? So I took it as a good advice and I went to saw him. And talked a few nice things. He is telling, Swamiji, I am very fortunate that all my three daughters have come. But the fourth daughter did not yet come. So I told him, where is your fourth daughter? She is in America. You see, people in America, they are busy and they are having so many other things. She will come. What is the big deal? She will come. Why don't you think of something else? No, what is there, Swami? I have done everything, my daughters, my son, only she did not. He is concerned about that only. So these people, they know about pravritti, activism, but they don't know about nivritti, quietism, when it is time to put an end to pravritti. You see, there will be some pravritti. You wake up and then take a shower. I am not saying against such kind of activity. Activism, I am saying. Activism as a principle that leads the life forward. That comes to an end. Even the body doesn't cooperate. And therefore, the time for activism has ended. Now it is the time for quietism. Because the body is like that, I became old, that could be one reason. This is what is called vanaprastha and sannyasa. Brahmachari, grahastha, life of activism. Then comes vanaprastha and sannyasa. Vanaprastha is retirement and sannyasa is relinquishing everything and becoming a mendicant. These are the two stages. They correspond to quietism. Therefore, in life, there is a place for activism by all means, but then quietism is equally important. And that is the shanta. In a general way, that is the meaning of shanta. More specifically, shanta is, you look at your mind. When there are vishayas in the mind, it is ashanta. What are the vishayas? Your shabda is a vishaya. Like what? You are listening to something on the cell phone all the time. Your mind remains agitated. The cell phone, no? It has made people vachalas. People were not talking so much earlier. But the companies, they come up with more and more competitive schemes and make people chatter boxes. They converted the entire society into a multitude of chatter boxes. You are traveling in the flight, they talk. You are traveling in a train in India. India is the worst in this regard. And at 9 to 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, they will be talking in the train, on the cell phone. They will be talking and talking. They are most insensible about the comfort of other people around. People are crazy. They will be talking. So, therefore, Shabda. So, when your mind is loaded with the Shabda, then there is only agitation to the mind. Therefore, you have to give up the cell phone. You see, I remember such occasions very clearly. I went to Kakinada to take a few classes. Then somebody told me, "Yes, sir, you have to come and see my mother one time." He is not interested in me, his mother, which is fine. He is a businessman. So I said, "Why?" "She wants to see you." "Okay," and I appreciate the love and all that, and I went. He took me after the class. Generally, I don't do this kind of rituals, reverence, etc. I don't encourage. But there is always a time to yield. So I went. And this elderly woman, she is in the bed. She is all right. She got up and sat in the bed only. "So, Swamiji, very glad to see you, this and that." "Then, Swamiji, tell me how to have a quiet mind." A very valid question. And you can only ask a Swami such question. Then there are two cell phones by her side. She is aged 90. Two cell phones. There is a helping person employed, and so I asked her, "Why two cell phones?" She told me, "One of my sons is here, another son is in Delhi, daughter is in US. So one cell phone for India calls and one cell phone for US calls." I asked her, "Why can't you have both in the same cell phone?" "No, no, there is a better deal in having like that, and it is more comfortable for me." "Oh, good. So how many calls you make and how many calls you receive?" So she gave a number. I told her, "How your mind will ever be quiet?" "It will never ever be quiet." Therefore, the mind is loaded with the Shabda. It cannot be quiet. So, Shabda is names, nama. Rupa is the forms. Suppose the mind is loaded with forms. Once you have names, the forms follow automatically. They come together. They do not come separately. They come together. Therefore, there is Shabda, there is Rupa, and then there is Rasa. Shabda and Rupa, they are the major things. Rasa occasionally. So, you think of lunch or you think of dinner, then rasa ideas will flood the mind. And you have certain demands about it and all that. Then gandha, that is less important. So, shabda sparsha. Sparsha is a kind of softness of the things to wear, this and that. The main thing is shabda and rupa, name and form. Therefore, as long as your mind is flooded with the Shabda Sparsha Rupa Rasa Gandha, you cannot have Shanti. Therefore, Shantam Manaha, the mind which is quiet, is a mind which is free from these five. We will do some meditation. So, at the end of the class, we will do some meditation. So, what is the temperature? It can be controlled? What is the control there? You tell me what is the temperature, I will tell you how to control it, where to put it. Because you can control it, I am asking. If you cannot control, we are okay with what is. You make it 69. 6, 9. You cannot make it? Or make it 7, 0. Okay, make it 7, 0. Saptatihi. 77 is hot. I came from India and India feels better than here. Okay. So, they will do something about it. Therefore, mind, I will give you a challenge. You practice it. This is all. You know it now and you learn it now. It is not for future. Now and here. You see, this is the tip, practical tip. You make the mind free from 5 things. Shabda sparsha rupa rasa gandha. And see what happens. The mind becomes quiet. And when the mind becomes quiet, you are a different entity. You are not the child of the mind anymore. You are not a product of the mind anymore. You are not a psychological entity. You are a different entity. A new dimension will be opened unto you. The door opens, the door to a higher dimension opens. And you walk into it. And already you are in meditation. Just see that these 5 things are not there in your mind. This is what we call nirvishayam manaha. Mind free from vishayas. This is the temporary quietude of the mind. You sit in meditation, only this much. Let there not be shabda sparsha rupa rasa gandha in the mind. Let the mind be free. Drop all the 5. And then what? Then nothing. Just be. Drop all these 5 and just be. Already you are transported to a dimension higher than psychological dimension. That is shanta. In that dimension, you shine with a wisdom. A light. People are accustomed to know only that which the mind helps them to know. This is what we call, that means what? With the help of the mind, what you will know? Nama Rupa you will know. That is all you will know. On the other hand, when you go beyond the mind, how to go beyond the mind? Take the mind and put it under the foot and push it down. How to go beyond the mind? It's an expression, Appa. It's an expression. So to go beyond the mind means allow the mind to become quiet. Already you are beyond the mind. Now the mind is, you see, once the mind is quiet, you have gone to a higher dimension. Now that dimension is not mental or psychological anymore. Because mind is not there. Mind has become quiet. But you are there. Very much there. When the mind is active, you are there or you are not there. Kind of 50-50. Sometimes you are there, sometimes you are not there. Suppose I am talking and your mind is active. You are not there. You are not there. Suppose you are thinking of some purchase in the mall. And you sit here physically and I am talking. Now where are you? You are in the mall. Okay? Therefore, so when the mind is active, you are not there. You are pulled to wherever the mind goes. Whereas when the mind is quiet, you are there. For the first time, I am. Only when the mind is quiet. That is one point. The quietude of the mind, it's a significance. That is what I am describing. The second point is, when the mind is quiet, you see, mind is the instrument to know. Right? So this is a recorder. I know with the mind. Of course with the eyes. Some sound is coming. I know with the mind. Of course with the ears. The mind is the tool. Tool. Of what? Of cognition. Mind is the tool of cognition. I prefer to call it that way. I don't want to call it mind is the tool of knowledge. Because then you think whatever you cognize becomes knowledge now. So you cognize this as a serpent, that becomes knowledge. There is no serpent there. And therefore, mind is the tool of cognition. I prefer to call it that way. I don't want to call it pointing the tool of knowledge. You may call it that way, but then knowledge becomes very limited thing. Whereas when the mind as a tool of cognition dissolves, it becomes quiet, then you believe that there is nothing more to cognize, nothing more to know. The means, the tool is gone. The tool is gone, but you shine with a light of your own, because you are the Atma, which is self-shining. You don't need a mind. Mind, you need a mind to know Namarupa. But to know the reality, which is beyond Namarupa, which is nameless and shapeless reality, you don't need the mind. In fact, mind becomes an obstacle. And then you know. How do you know? Because you are Swayam Prakasha, self-shining Atma. So you shine with a new light of wisdom. Light means not this light, the physical light, no. Light of wisdom. For example, when your mind is quiet, let us say for a while your mind is quiet, say. That morning you decided to go to the lawyer's office and discuss the modalities of filing a writ petition against your erstwhile partner. Suppose some such thing is there. Because some financial transaction, you were at the receiving end, you have to correct it, therefore you want to file a lawsuit against the partner. This is what people do all the time. So what I do, the appointment is there with the lawyer at 10 o'clock. And at 8 o'clock, you do a meditation, 8:15, 8:30, this kind of meditation. Mind is quiet for 10 minutes then. And then you come out of that meditation, and then you feel like, what am I up to? That is the question that comes in the mind. What am I up to? I have to take a cajoling against the person. Why? Why? Our existence as human bodies on this planet is very temporary, very transient it is. It is like a flash. There is no value in it. And within this short existence, insignificant existence, you want to take cajoling against somebody else? You want to hate somebody? You want to have revenge against somebody else? What kind of a silly thing it is to do? Come on. So you call the lawyer and say, sir, today unexpectedly I became busy, we will see, I will call you again. You see, that is wisdom. And where from that wisdom came to you? By scriptures it came. Are by scriptures help you? I don't deny that. That wisdom came from within. It did not come from scriptures. Scriptures are useful only to quote. Okay, they cannot be useful to live. The knowledge of the scriptures, when it becomes your own wisdom, then you live it. That's why people quote scriptures but behave opposite. Because what they are quoting, it is not translated into their own wisdom. That gulf is there. And how to bridge that gulf? Shanti, the quietude of the mind. Therefore, the quietude of the mind has a value. Then one more thing. When you remain quiet in the mind consistently, morning, evening, sometime, there is no specific time for it. You can practice in specific times, but anywhere you can remain quiet. You sit in a bus, you can be quiet. You are flying in a flight, you can be quiet. Suppose you are reading, suddenly you feel like remaining quiet, you be quiet. Of course, I don't want to do it while I am taking a class, but otherwise, anytime I can be quiet. I am reading something, it's okay, I have read for some time, then I become quiet. Like that, you can be quiet anytime. So what happens when you are quiet for a short while? You become nirvishaya. But when you are quiet consistently, you eventually become nirvasana. Got the point? In the short range, it is nirvishaya. Vishayas are not there, mind is quiet. Eventually, with consistency, means with practice, abhyasa, so the vasana will go. So, you practice meditation some more, then you will call the lawyer and say, I have to say, I changed my mind, I am not pursuing this reputation anymore. And then you will call some other adversary and say, dear friend, dear brother, God bless you, I am out of the contest. Now you do whatever you like. I am not contesting anything anymore. Come on. So your vasana has disappeared. Shanti, you see, shanti, people believe that action will bring some transformation. To get a change, you need to act. Come on, here, what is the action? Where is the action here? The organs of action are quiet. Even the mind, thinking is also an act. Act of thinking it is. Even that act also is not there. Therefore, here there is an inner transformation, very deep transformation. A hateful person becomes a loving person. That kind of transformation cannot happen by karma. That inner transformation, in the case of karma yoga, it can happen. But mere karma, however good it is, cannot bring that inner transformation. Whereas shanti, it is a very silent power, it is shanti. Like this light, is it struggling or is it striving or is it making an effort or is it quiet? It is quiet, the lamp. And while being quiet, it fills all around with light, like a rose. What is it doing? Is it taking a broomstick into hand and cleaning up the whole place or what? No. Rose is not doing any such thing. That is a Telugu expression. I translated it into English. The rose won't take a broomstick and clean things up. It won't do anything. It just is. How do you describe a rose? It is. But as it abides, abide is a beautiful word. To say is, that is said in a much better way. It is, instead of it is, I'll say it abides. As it abides, the whole space around is filled with fragrance. The power of rose, the power of candle, that is the power of shanti. That inner quietude, it will bring that inner transformation in you. The transformation is in the form of transporting you from the physical, psychological or physico-psychological dimension to a higher dimension. Did you ever think about it? I look at myself. So, what kind of being it is? I am. Okay, I am. What kind of existence it is? An existence that is entirely defined by the physical and psychological. Right? That is the existence. I am true. But what kind of amness it is? What kind of easiness it is? An easiness, an existence totally dictated by the mind and the body. Huh? What kind of existence it is? Did it ever occur to you? There is an existence beyond that, above that, superior to that. And the name of that existence is Atma. That is the name. And now, this lower existence, physical, psychological existence, is no existence at all. It is all your imagination. Whereas, that higher existence, that superior existence, which is called Atma, that is you. That is the reality. And in fact, one more thing. As a physico-psychic entity, not psychological I mean, okay? As a physico-psychological entity, you have the habit of worshipping a god. And what is that God? Do you have any idea? That God is none other than that superior existence called Atma. That is the God. Don't you know that? You should know. The Shanti has a power to bring in that inner light into focus, into the fore. That inner light, the light of wisdom, it comes into the fore. Four means a four. Means it comes into the agra, it comes into the focus. And so that is a very important prerequisite for the study of Atmabodha. Therefore, Shantaha. You should be quiet people. You see, I take classes in India. In Shivananda Ashram, I teach Gita. Many people come to the temple. There is a temple associated with the ashram. Shivananda Ashram, lecture hall, and adjoining is the temple, within the same premises. They come to the temple. And it happens in a small way in Salosburg also. They come to the temple with flowers, with milk, this, that, all kinds of objects they bring and come. And they are done with the temple. How long will be there? They take prasadam, the job is done in 10-15 minutes. Then they are walking and walking out. While walking out, they see some 100 people are sitting and somebody is talking. And that somebody is in the attire of a swami, in a tractive attire, you know. When the children, 1-year-old, 2-year-old children, they are attracted by this attire. And in India, the street dogs, in India dogs means street dogs, when they see a swami, they become alert. Who is this guy? It draws their attention immediately. Anyway, sometimes that alertness is transformed into hyperactivity. They start shouting and all that. Anyway, so they notice this guy. He's speaking something and they are all listening to it. So let me see what it is. They walk in. Our classes are free. We do not put any restrictions on anybody. As long as they don't make too much noise, they are okay. So no restrictions. They can walk in. And after a while they can walk out. That is the way I prefer it. Because the whole blessed thing is about moksha, which is freedom. Okay? And you cannot have a means that opposes freedom to acquire a goal which is freedom. The means and goal cannot be in opposite direction. Be free. From our side, be free. Even Pujya Swamiji follows the same principle. Not license, but freedom. So, they walk in. Sit for a while. In 5 minutes, they feel jitters. They cannot sit anymore. What is going on? No story? No music? No orchestra? No song? No dance? Then what is there to sit? And he is talking about some Atma, Brahma, mind, this and that, what kind of stuff it is. He should talk about Duryodhana or Dronacharya or some such thing he should talk about. What is this Atma, Brahma, what kind of thing it is? So, it is all Greek and Latin for them. And therefore, it doesn't attract their attention. And therefore, they walk away. Okay. Some people, these people bring, come to the class, they come. In 15 minutes, they get up and walk away. It is like they are sitting on a hot oven, on a hot plate. They cannot sit. Because even to sit in a class of Vedanta, you need to have a modicum of quietude. Some fundamental quietude, some little quietude is required. So, that is an important qualification. So, when you practice this quietude in a consistent way, you become free from vasanas, nirvasana. So, now, there are two words in Gita they are used, prasanna. Prasada, prasanna. Prasannam manaha, prasadaha. The quietude. It is same as shanti or shanta. They have a big significance in the Vedanta. In the Karmakanda, Shanti is less significant. It is not very significant. You must have seen Punya Havajanam, etc. Shanti Rastu. We want Shanti. Okay, what else you want? We have a big list. Shanti is, we said it, that is not very important. Real things are coming later. Pushti Rastu, Tushti Rastu, Dhanadhanya Samurdhi Rastu, Putra Pautra Abhivurdhi Rastu. Big list is there. Shanti is some silly thing which we said initially, but we are more interested in other things. Whereas in Vedanta, there is only one thing. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Nothing else. Only Shanti. So Shanti means mind is Nirvishaya. Further Shanti, it becomes Nirvasana. What is Nirvasana, you know? So, eyes see, but there is no attachment. That is Nirvasana. It is like I see this this beautiful gadget. I feel like taking it to India. That is Vasana. Whereas I see it, I appreciate it also. I can see its beauty and all that. But it doesn't occur to me that I should own it. It doesn't occur to me. I don't even get an element of attachment to it. No attachment. That is called Nirvasana. So $1,000,000 is like that, $1,000,000. I can say $100 also, but to make the point very clear, $1,000,000 is lying there on the table. And I move around it all the time. But I know, I see that. And I can understand also what it is. And what it can do also, I know. I am not a novice. I am aware of everything. But it doesn't occur to me. Me means I am not saying about myself. Just as an example I am saying. Me is not me, you is not you, okay? That is how it is going to be for these 10 days. And so, it doesn't occur to me that I can pick up some or of all of it. It just doesn't occur to me. That is called Nirvasana. Like that in everything. You see, but there is no attachment. You hear, but there is no attachment. I heard a music. Tremendous music, marvelous music. But then it is time to move on. So we move on. Not that we are stuck with the music now. Not like that. Or get that record. We want to hear it again. This, that. No. Music is wonderful. We love it. I love it. But then it is time to move on. No vasana. You taste, but you don't want it to be repeated or any such thing. Suppose you taste something very delicious and then you have vasana, you will soon become a diabetic. Works like that. That is how people get diabetes. If vasana is not there, then where is diabetes? It will go away. I mean, one kind of diabetes, the most prevalent type. There may be some other kind of diabetes. Therefore, it is the vasana. And then there is the ability to speak, vagindriya, the ability to speak, but there is no pressure to speak. There is no effort to speak without being asked for. There is no effort to speak to make a point, to prove a point, etc., etc. They will not be there. Jadaval lokam acharet. The person remains very quiet, as though he doesn't know anything. Because the pressure, that is the vasana, is not there. So, when you become shanta or prasanna, you see, they give temple, in temple they give prasada, sweet, madhuram it is. So, it is given as, it signifies this state of mind. That is the prasada. And when you have prasada, so prasanna chetaso yashu buddhir paryapatishthate, that wisdom, it gets established in you when your mind is very quiet. See, I am not saying when your mind is dull. I am not saying that. Okay? It is not dullness of the mind. It is not blankness of the mind. It is the inner silence, the silence of the mind in which the awareness, absolute, that Atma, it shines with all its glory. In you, no one here. That is what I am talking about. So, you should not confuse the awareness and alertful awareness with the dullness of the mind. You are very alert, fully awake, totally aware, but inner silent. Silent in the inside. That is what we are talking about. That is called Shanti. It is also called Prasada. And in the temple, you see, the temple people should know the significance of what all they do in the temple. So, there is a book called Heart is the Temple, in which every aspect of temple in terms of its significance is described. And they should know that. And if they are doing things which do not have any meaningful significance, they should stop doing them. Then because there is no value. There must be some value. Without value, you should not do anything. Suppose you blow a conch, there is a value. The conch signifies Om, Omkara, there is a value. You ring a bell, there is a value, because the Omkara is like the ringing of a bell. Prasada, you distribute some sweet, a little, not much. Distribute a little sweet. You see what happens is, in some of these temples, especially the Vaishnava kind of temples, these nowadays even Shaiva temples are also not lagging behind much in this regard. They compare with themselves with the Vaishnava temples. When they are like that, why should we lag behind? They are also coming from behind. So these temples, the priests, etc., and some of the very committed devotees, they are all very heavy set. You know why? Because they will be eating these prasadas all the time. Multiple prasadas. And full of sugar and oil and ghee and all that. Very heavy set. Very unfortunate. Their life should be that of tapas. And if tapas is the guiding factor in life, they should have been lean, not heavy. So, anyway, therefore, prasada is not to be consumed in large quantities. It is not meant for satisfying our taste buds. It just signifies a little, a small little, a pinch of it into the mouth. The mouth becomes temporarily sweet, a little. And so that signifies that inner shanti, that is the meaning of prasada. Now in temples, this connection between the prasada, physical prasada, and that inner prasada, they are connected. One signifies the other. This point is missed, so much so, you have the most unfortunate and unacceptable scheme of things around this prasada. It is made in huge quantities, distributed to people for money, and it is sold, and it is a big merchandise activity. It is. All of this is there because somehow a false notion is created among people that by eating this particular kind of food, you become pious. Eating makes you pious? Just by eating certain amount of food, you become pious? Kaisa? How? But that kind of an entirely wrong notion, it sits in the minds of people. Therefore, just eat prasada. That will bring you some merit. What merit? In eating, what is the merit? You give up eating and make other person eat, a hungry person eat, there is merit in it. You eat yourself, what is the merit in it? But that kind of a very false practice and notion, it became. These are some of the issues that the Hindu religion is facing nowadays. People have to look at it and address it. Anyway, so I have digressed again. Please bear with my digressions. So coming back, Shanti, Prasada, That is a prerequisite. Satya Jnanam, the knowledge of the reality, will reveal itself. It will reveal itself. You don't catch it, you don't invite it, it will reveal itself. Atma Jnanam, provided you satisfy this condition of Shanti. Veta Raginam, Veta Raga, Viraga, one of the same. Veta Raga, Viraga. So, means person having dispassion. You see, in life, one should not be passionate. One should not be passionate. Suppose food is there. Suppose you have a passion for food. You imagine what will happen. Imagine. I was interacting with a gentleman. He was diabetic and has a heavy weight and all that. Those problems are there. I am talking about how to get rid of these issues. He was discussing with me. I told him, since when are you so heavy? He told us, Swamiji, what to tell you? It all happened. He's a business executive of a company. And therefore, whenever I go for these business meetings, those fellows, they somehow got hold of my weakness, that I have a weakness for food. Vegetarian. Not any other kind of food. Vegetarian only. But it is that. That is not the point. Vegetarian is not the point. Point is nutritious and healthy food. So, they found my weakness, and therefore, they select a hotel and they instruct the chef there. And they see that my table is loaded with choicest food items. They were doing that. This is how, initially it occurred to me that these people are trying to curry favor with me. But my taste buds, they overtake. And so I became a victim of my own weakness. All knowingly, I know that they are treating me to a good dinner because they want to influence my judgment. I knew it, but still I went along with it. This is how I became obese. He told me that. And I am unable to overcome this. This is the language which I held, and therefore it is stuck in my mind. I am unable to overcome this passion for food. I have passion for food. Now you know what is vairagya? Vairagya is nothing but the absence of absensity. It is a negative quality. All Vedanta qualities are like that. Negative qualities. Shanti is also negative. The absence of movement of the mind. Agitation of the mind. Shanti is that. Anyway, the absence signifies something else. Don't think it is shunyam. So, vairagya, the absence of the passion for food. We all need food and we like to eat some tasty food, you know. You cannot eat, if every item is like tofu, how can you eat it? So, some tasty food you need, some reasonable taste. Not too much running after taste, but it must be reasonably tasty. At the same time, it must be healthy and nutritious, but also reasonably tasty. We all need that food, that kind of food, and we love our food. When we eat it, we like it. But suppose these basic requirements of food is replaced by passion for food. Nivalam Atma Jnanam, you will become sick. Two things will come right away. One is diabetes and the other is BP. Both are very dangerous. You should not allow diabetes to persist in your body. If it is acquired diabetes, you should get rid of it. There is a way of getting rid of it. Go to some yoga studio. If you don't know proper yoga studio, ask my advice, I will tell you. Go there and practice some yoga for a week or two. Give up everything else, so do that first. And after 2 weeks, you walk out without diabetes. And also a regimen, how to keep it that way. You should not allow diabetes to persist. It is very problematic. And then BP. Do you have BP? If it is just BP that is acquired due to age or due to food, you can get rid of it very simple. You give up salt. That's it. You give up salt. Over. Your BP is gone. If it is still lingering, do a little pranayama. Now it is gone. You need not take pills and all that. Pills will work for a year or two and then they stop working. And then you have to go for some other kind of pill. It is a very dangerous cycle. So you see, all this I said to define what is passion. Passion is very bad. Passion should not be there. Children, our own children, we love them, but give them their space. Don't be passionate about it. If you are passionate, I mean grown-up children, I am telling, if you are passionate, they will not like it. They will tell, Dad, give me a break. They will tell. They cannot deal with your passion. Oh my son, what is this? They cannot deal with it. So like that, in every aspect of life, you must be very moderate. That is the mantra, moderate, not passionate. Moderate. Moderate, you know? It is the right word, moderate. Never be passionate. Vetaragina. Now, I talked about Vetaraga in terms of physical health and psychological health. Whereas for Atmajnana, suppose you have passion. Passion for what? Passion for the worldly things. What else? All passion is about the worldly things. Now, you seek Atmajnana and then you are passionate about the worldly things. They are mutually contradictory. Don't be very clever about it. You cannot keep both, you know. You cannot be on this both sides of this wall at the same time. Okay, don't be very clever about it. People are very clever. They have worked it out all. We study Atma Bodha, Tatma Bodha. These are people's favorite texts. So Tatma Bodha and Atma Bodha we study. And we are business people, we are making money, lot of money, we are this, we are that. So we keep both. Iha and para, some such expressions they use, they are making a mistake. It is not like, it doesn't work like that. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna used to say, to the extent you are passionate about the worldly things, to that extent, your knowledge of the self, your knowledge of self is down. They are inversely proportional. The more and more you are passionate towards the worldly things, the more and more you are away from the reality of self, self-knowledge. You are away from it. The less and less you are passionate, the nearer and nearer you are towards the wisdom of self. Therefore, Vetaraginam. So, that Vairagya is very important. Similarly, you see, some of these things, they are a bit hard to say, harsh to hear, hard to say, because you have to go against the current, the social understanding. You have to go against it. And therefore, they are hard to say. And people who are steeped in worldly values, they find them very harsh. You see, I tell you, a rich man, just let us say, I am not against a rich man, just I am telling, a rich man is a very peculiar expression it is. A man who is steeped in riches and a rich man. Now, I am giving you a thought, food for thought. You think about it. It's not that I have figured it out everything and offer you in a platter, you take it. Not like that. You think about it. A rich man. Who is a rich man? Or what is a rich man? You think about it. I will ask you a question. A rich man, is he the master of his riches or is he the slave to his riches? Very simple question. But at the same time, very hurtful question also. You see, we are slaves to to what we accumulate. Suppose you accumulate 100 tulas of gold, you remain a slave to that gold as long as you own that gold. If you become wise and give it up, give or give away or give up, you choose any one of them. So, then you become free. But you hold on to your gold, your riches, you are a slave to them. People don't understand that. It is very hard to understand. So, that means there is no freedom. Slave means what? There is no freedom. You see, I tell you, just I'm discussing Vairagya in its pristine, pure form I'm discussing. You see, a person who can say, I own nothing, is the happiest person in this creation. Please understand that. Now you take your time to reach there, but that is where you have to reach. Who says, I do not own anything, he is the happiest person. So, I am not a guru, I don't have any shishyas, I do not own any real estate, land property, I do not own any buildings. I live in a building, but I do not own any property, I do not own any ashrams, I do not own anything. This moment I can leave this world, nothing will be disturbed, I need not make any arrangements. I can leave this world in a jiffy, I can live. He is a free person. He may live 100 years, that is not the point. He is the free person. There is freedom. You see, what do you want? You want pleasures or freedom? You have to choose between the two. If you want pleasures, you don't have freedom. You become addicted. Whereas, if you want freedom, you see people, that there is next point, mumukshu naam. Are you seeking freedom? What is it that you are seeking? Mumukshu, there is that pratyayam suffix which we call san, san pratyaya. That means desirous of seeking. So what is it that you are seeking? I want to know. You are seeking heaven? Then Atmabodha is not for you. The Padmabodha Chaitya in his Tika, he says, Ihamutrartha phalabhoga virāgaha. Because people seek heaven. This heaven, or you call it paradise, some people call it paradise, some people call it heaven. And we have any number of sects within Hinduism who have multiple names for this heaven. Like somebody calls it Vaikuntha. And they have a blueprint of Vaikuntha before them. Really, I'm not even exaggerating. They have a blueprint. So the entire geography is there. This is called a Puranic geography. It has nothing to do with the actual geography. Puranic geography. Now, this is Buddhi. It is a vertical model. Can you believe it? It's a vertical model. So there is Prithivi as if it is flat. They think like that. The blessed thing, Prithivi is flat. And then above that is Antariksha, Bhuvaha, and above that is Suvaha, above that Jana, above that Tapaha, above that Mahaha, above that Satya, above that Vaikuntha. And above that Kailasa for Shiva people. Whereas Vaishnavas, very interestingly, they don't reject Kailasa. They accept Kailasa. They are kind enough to accept Kailasa. But it will be below Vaikuntha. That is his contention. As long as you put it below Vaikuntha, he has no issue with Kailasa. Let it be there. And then we have another group, Goloka. They put it beyond Vaikuntha, above Vaikuntha. They accept Vaikuntha, but they are not for Vaikuntha. They want to go beyond Vaikuntha. These are all multiple heaven. They mean all that. They take it very seriously. They take it very seriously. They are striving very hard to reach Goloka. Why? Because Sri Krishna is there. And who else is there? All Gopikas are there. In Goloka, you don't find any man, only one man. That is, literally they take it. There is some spiritual significance we can understand. So all other are women only. And then when we go there, we become women and go there. Can it? It is like that. So, suppose you want to go to Goloka, or want to go to heaven, or paradise, or whatever. You are not a candidate for Vedanta. You want things of this world. What are they? Artha and Kama. Things of the other world is Dharma. Dharma in that limited sense, restricted sense. So if you want things of this world, Artha and Kama, Vedanta is not for you. You see, people should ask a question. What am I seeking in this world, in this life? They should ask this question. People don't ask any questions. They have become so dull in their worldly life that they lost that felicity to ask a question. Bhagavan Rama Maharshi used to say, ask this question, who am I? Ask the question and see what happens. It transforms you. Don't look for answer. Ask the question. The question has a power. It acts like a seed. Seed, when it finds fertile ground, the nutritious soil it finds, it has a tremendous power, the seed. You know what it will do? It will break the concrete open. The seed. Similarly, you put this question in your mind, who am I? Don't answer it. Because when you answer it, the answer comes from your mind and hence it will be false. Coming from the mind cannot be real, cannot be true. Because mind is conditioning. Do you know that? Another name for conditioning is mind. And therefore, the answer that comes from conditioning, how can that be real? It can only be a conditioned answer. So, like there is a conditioning that a parrot. Did you ever see this parrot Jyotisham? Chilaka Jyotisham. So he sits on the footpath and so he invites. People are insecure, so they go. And first he asks you to feed the parrot. He has the material ready. He will take some money from you, or some seeds, etc. Come on, the parrot is going to tell you what your life will be in future. You feed the parrot, so you feed the parrot with love. It accepts, he doesn't feed it. He keeps it hungry. And so it picks up those two, three seeds. He won't allow you to put a lot of it. Because some other customer will come, you know. So two, three seeds, it eats. And it is contented in a way. Now he says, oh parrot, will you tell this man's future? It nods its head. And it makes some sound, yes, obliging sound. Come on, this packet of cards I have put, all are written by him only. All are positively written. Every single card is written in glowing terms. And all those cards are, bound cards are kept there, 20 of them. And he asks, oh parrot, pick up a card. It always picks up somewhere from the middle of the bunch, always. Never any other way. It picks up. And then he doesn't take it immediately. You come. It walks very majestically and presents in a very polite way. And then he says, sir, will you read it or shall I read it? You read it, so then he reads. That parrot's behavior and our behavior is no different. Because we are conditioned people. What is God? We are so heavily conditioned that any discussion that I open about God becomes superfluous. I cannot continue the discussion. Because you all know God. People are like that. So, you have to ask this question. What am I, who am I? I said one more question. What am I up to? You know that question? What am I up to? A businessman was there. I am giving examples just to make a point. His age is 65. He asked me, Swamiji, I want to purchase one more business establishment. What is your advice? He is already rich, multi-millionaire, and he wants to expand his business. Age is 65, and me, I am the person to take advice from. And I give an advice, because it is I should keep my conscience clear and clean. I told him, you have enough wealth. You don't need to make some more wealth. You need to be more healthy. You are not healthy. You are heavy set already. You urgently need some health. Because when you continue this kind of lifestyle, you will become sick. When you are sick, your millions won't help you. When there is a stomach pain, a millionaire was there. Why million? Million is a small number nowadays. A billionaire was there. He was a very cozy and comfortable in the knowledge of his wealth. In that knowledge, not that his wealth is all around him. In that knowledge, he is very comfortable. Then suddenly, stomach pain has started. And now, he is not wealthy anymore. All his wealth is not worth a dime. A stomach pain is enough to make your wealth worthless. Therefore, dear sir, what you need is not some more wealth. What you urgently need is some physical health. Therefore, do some exercise and may employ a yoga guy and I give him some money and learn a few yoga things and be healthy. And then study Gita. That is what you need. But he is pulled in the direction of samsara. Somebody else has advised him how to do the business more and all that. After a decade he came back to me and told, Swamiji, I am stuck in this thing. You have advised me that day, I did not follow it. I told him, that advice is valid even today. Don't think time is lost. Sthiplasyam antakalepi. I am not going to feel bad that he did not follow my advice. Nor I am going to feel on the top of the world just because he follows my advice. That is not the issue at all. The issue is even today. What is lost is nothing is lost. Today you wake up. You should know what you seek. So a rich man seeks something that he visualizes or imagines in those riches, more of it. If I become further rich, I will have this, I will have that, something he imagines. My name will come in Forbes list. Some such funny notion he will have. He is seeking that. Because riches in a physical sense have no value any further. He is already rich. So this way, people, they are busy without ever knowing what they are seeking. You should know what you are seeking. Hanuman, he was seeking, he knew what he is seeking, but he is seeking in the wrong place. Whereas we are as active as Hanuman, we are very busy people. We have 2-3 cell phones going on and so many things going on. We are very busy, nobody has any time. We are very busy. Okay, God bless, you should be busy. What is it that you are seeking? You are seeking a wrong thing, of course in the wrong place. What is it that you are seeking? You should know. I am telling you what you are seeking. I am seeking, these are called purusharthas. I am seeking artha. is wealth. No, you should stop that. Then, to stop artha, seeking artha, you should stop seeking kama also. When seeking kama, you cannot stop seeking artha, because kama comes very costly. Kama is costly. Suppose you want to have a very nice dinner. It is costly. You cannot have it for some simple price. At least $100 will go for it. I don't know. Something like that. Therefore, stop seeking kama. Stop seeking artha. Stop seeking heaven. You have to give up heaven also. That is a dharma. Dharmartha kama. Then that leaves only one purushartha. So therefore, now purushartha's are not four. Purushartha's are four for worldly people. Purushartha is one, that is the mumukshu. He is seeking only one, mumukshu, moksha seeker. The other three purushartha's are no more purushartha's. People understand. They think purushartha's are four. And we have to seek all the four. This is how some people teach also. It's a wrong teaching. Purushartha's are not four. They are 3 plus 1. Not four. They are 3 plus 1. And so, either you seek three, trivarga, and caught in the world, or you seek the fourth, giving up the four, three. So now only one purushartha. In ignorance, there are 4 purusharthas, of which you are seeking 3. When in wisdom, there is only 1 purushartha and you are seeking that. That is a mumukshu. So, you seek freedom. You see, seeking freedom, I will give you a very down-to-the-earth example. Like, I have a room with a small cot. Some simple basic arrangements. And there is an offer of a palatial place. I can go there and the place is put at my disposal, I can go there. There is an invitation. But I prefer this small room. Why? Because I love freedom. I want my freedom. How is this example? So, even a palace is not, it doesn't interest me, because somehow it will put some restrictions upon my freedom. Therefore, I don't want a palace, I want my freedom. Then, another example I will give you. It is time for dinner, and here there is food, rasam, buttermilk, some rice. That is the food that I have here. There is an invitation. The car is waiting outside. We have to drive to Manhattan or some other downtown and have a dinner. Now, I say no to that politely and I state this. You know why? Because in that there is no freedom. I have to sit in a car and it will be going on. Traffic. You are not the only diner or dinner going guy. All people are going for dinner only, traffic. And then you stand before a big hotel, 5-star hotel, where the bill will be astronomical. And you are standing there, no place to sit. Because this lady, she tells, I will seat you, you stand there. She has to seat another 2-3 guys. And she says, stand there. She becomes angry also. Stand there. Let me seat these 4 people. And then she will take her sweet time. After seating those 4 people, she will come. Come now. And, okay, how many of you? We are 3. Okay, wait. And then she will tell you where to sit. And after sitting there, nobody will come to you. You are just watching their hunger. Did you ever face this kind of a thing? You are hungry and nobody will come. And then our suit boot wala will come. Anyway, I want some simple way to sell food. What is soup good? Or he will come with a paper and then what will he do? So he will come. He will not sell. He will ask you, what will you want? I want a cup of water. No, water will not be served. What a misfortune. And I have to pay a big bill after the end of all this suffering. Therefore, I want my freedom. Therefore, this rasam, buttermilk, rice. I want my freedom. I love my freedom. You want freedom or not? He is my son. And so he is doing job. I live with him. Do you have freedom in that? It puts severe restrictions on your freedom. Our Mahatma Rishis have visualized that, and therefore they have advised Vanaprastha. You see, nowadays it is a fashion to tell the grandchildren will come up well, this and that. Grandpa, grandpa, grandchild. A new value is added to that. Okay, God bless you, but what will you do with Vanaprastha? Our tradition talks, doesn't talk of grandpa versus grand. It doesn't talk, that language is not there anywhere. You don't find it in the scriptures anywhere. Gita doesn't talk about it. Nobody talks about it. You are imagining this grandpa business. A grandpa has no freedom anymore. He is a bound person. He is bound to a kid who doesn't care for him. The kid belongs to a generation, and in between there is one more generation, the third generation, and the grandpa belongs to first generation. The generational gap, the psychological gap, is something that you cannot imagine. The other day, I saw a kid, not 2 years old. The kid, you know what he did? He took the cell phone. There are a few icons there. He pressed, and then he turned like this. I'm watching it. Not 2 years old. I was thrilled to see the intelligence of this kid. I blessed the kid wholeheartedly. But I do not want to live with that kid as my grandson and all that. Because I will be proved a fool 12 times a day. I don't want. I want to live alone somewhere. And bless the guy. Some of the grandpas don't feel bad about it. This is my style of teaching. And I am not trying to make you happy or any such thing. I am discussing a point. Vanaprastha. In Vanaprastha, no grandpa, grandchild, all this is dismissed. That is not to go. If it is there, you have to deal with it cautiously. So that you don't become attached. You have to think about these things. So, people want, you know, people, they want vamshankuram. The continuity of the family tree. That is what they want. They don't want freedom. Moksha they don't want. They want continuity of the family tree. Okay, go into dharmarthakama, that is what you are seeking. You are not seeking moksha. Did you see the difference between the two? I am a bit harsh. Probably now I realize that I have been unnecessarily harsh about these things. Anyway, so it is already done. And so, I seek freedom. My son comes to me, I bless him wholeheartedly. Generally they want something from us. Permanent it is. They have nothing to give to us. Even if it is something is there, they are not willing to give to us also. Because their looks are elsewhere. Their sight is elsewhere. Their sight is in a different level. Their sight and our sight, they don't coincide. I want the son to talk politely with me, but he doesn't talk politely with me. He talks in an abrasive way because he is busy. He is a samsari. How a samsari? He doesn't have freedom. How can he make you free? So, in the name of tradition, all conditioning, tradition, family, this, that, all family values, this, that, as if it is a presidential election. Huh? So, So all these things they talk about in the process, they miss the point altogether. Here, I am not against any of those things, but I am talking about freedom. And you know, where is freedom? Asangata. In non-attachment, there is freedom. All attachment is bondage. You crave only to slave. Slave is the verb there. To crave is to slave. To be attached is bondage. Non-attachment. I am not saying anything against love. Attachment is different from love. In love, there is no attachment. The young boy comes to me, I love him. And I know that he wants a few dollars from me, I give it to him. I have an object, he wants it, take it. Dear son, you take it. What else you want, you tell me, take it, take everything. Nothing required in return, no expectation, nothing. That is love. Love, you don't confuse love with attachment. That is not the topic now. Sometime I will talk about it. Therefore, you are a loving person all the way, but you are not attached. That is freedom. Now, freedom doesn't come easy because attachment is very powerful. It holds you in a death-like grip. Deathly grip it holds. The idea is the person falls dead, but attachment won't go. So, it's a very big thing. You see, now the time is over and the verses are so completed. So, I tell you the story in this Chandi Saptashati Devi Mahatmyam. Some of you may be reciting now and then. Then the story begins like this. People don't take anything meaningful out of stories. They just do Parayana. But Parayana, you have to understand the story. The significance. Once you know the significance, you are free. There, this king is there. His wife and children and minister. The minister, he joins hands with the enemy. And the king is dethroned. And he becomes the minister to the new king. And his wife joins hands with this minister. Because he has power and wealth, whereas this the husband is dethroned. Therefore she deserts him. And his son is there. He also joins with the minister and becomes, because he gets a good post, etc., in the new dispensation. Therefore, this person, deserted by the kingdom, by the minister, by beloved minister, confident minister, so deserted by him, deserted by wife, deserted by son, he goes, he has a horse that doesn't desert him, and so he goes by the horse to the forest. He runs away, because otherwise he will be put in the jail by the new king. And in the forest, he finds a kuti, one Mahatma there. His name is Sumedha. And he goes to him. Sumedha says, stay here. In the dormitory you stay. Take food here. Make ashram. You stay here. So he will be staying there. In that he ruminates about his fate. In that he is contemplating for a week. Then he comes to Sumedha and says, this is my lot. I am such and such. But even now I am attached to my wife and my son. I don't worry. I don't want my kingdom back. Gone is gone. Let the new king rule. I am not interested in power. That attachment is gone. My hatred to my minister who cheated me, that is also gone. I became free. But I am unable to become free from the attachment to my delinquent wife and son. How can I get rid of it? That is the question. And then comes the story and all that. Therefore, attachment is that powerful it is. All attachment is bondage. And attachment breeds fear. You are a frightened person only because of your attachments. If you are not attached, there is nothing to fear. Everything will end anyway. the whole world will end. There is nothing to fear. It is the attachment that makes us frightened people. Therefore, what is it that you want? You want freedom from attachment, from fear, from bondage. I want freedom. That is called moksha. Particularly, you have to understand that we are psychologically dependent people. That is our lot. We don't know what is the independence, psychological independence. We know political freedom because we vote now and then. We have physical freedom because we have made big houses and live in them. That is physical freedom, spatial freedom. Whereas psychological freedom we don't have. We want that freedom. We want to be free. The foremost thing I desire in this life, seek in this life, is freedom. That is what I seek. If you are seeking freedom, come. Atma Bodha is for you. We will say the verse. Tapo bhihi kshina papanam shantanam vitaraginam mukshunam apekshyoyam atma bodho vidhiyate. I finished with that verse. Good progress is made. Bodhonya sadhane jyohi sakshan mokshaika sadhanam vakasya vanhi vajnanam vina moksho na siddhyati. So now the goal before us is moksha. That is being said in the next verse. We'll see it tomorrow. Om Purnamada Purnamidam.